Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this episode, Scott spoke to late discovery transracial and transnational adoptee Ryan. He shares his complicated and challenging experience of finding out he was adopted at 18 years old. Ryan talks about living with shame and avoiding dealing with his adoption until the last few years, and then his journey looking for support as an adult. Ryan is open and honest in discussing the complexities of his situation and the lack of information he has of his biological family from Morocco. As always, if you've experience of adoption, fostering, or special guardianship from any perspective and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through the Facebook or Twitter page, or you can email us at andfpodcast@gmail.com.
So in this episode of Conversations, I am joined by Ryan, who has a very familiar tone to his voice, but welcome Ryan, and thanks for coming along to have a chat. So let's just get started and introduce yourself. Tell us about yourself and why you're talking to me.
Hello, Ryan here, fellow Scotsman. I'm 32, based in Edinburgh. And yeah, just came to talk about my adoption. And thanks for having me on.
No, you're welcome. You're very welcome.
I'll just get started.
Yeah, just crack on. I mean, it's your story. So, you know, you tell it how you want to tell it.
So, I was born in a town called El Jadida in Morocco in 1990, and I was adopted, and in adoption terms, I'm called a foundling, in other words, an orphan. So there was no information about any of my biological family, nothing at all. Don't even know where I was born, if it was in the hospital, know which hospital looked after me, that was it. And in Morocco, there's about 25 babies a day in that day and age happening, so it was quite a big scale. So I was adopted, I was brought to the UK after a lot of a difficult process, and yeah, I didn't find out about my adoption until age 18. And my adopted parents, adopted dad, he's Moroccan, and my adopted mum, she's English, white English, so my adopted dad's got the same skin colour as me, so adoption never crossed my mind. So when I was told about my adoption, that tore me apart. I was upset, and I kept this a secret. I was ashamed as well, so I kept this a secret only until the past couple of years, and that was really it really did play on my mind, and yeah, I would have took it to the grave with me. So thank God I decided to deal with the problems in my head. Yeah, going back, I was transracial adoption and transnational, so obviously my mum's different race from me, different country, and in adoption terms I'm an LDA, late discovery adoptee. So when I was introduced to this adoption world, we are quite a minority in the population. So when I go into it even more, I'm a minority because I found out late. I'm a minority because I'm a transracial. I'm a minority because I'm a transnational. I'm a minority because I kept my adoption a secret, literally telling no one. And I didn't meet, even now, I've still not met many people who've been through that. And also being a foundling, an orphan, that's pretty difficult to deal with, having no information. Yeah, so yeah, my mother, I was not told out of love. My mum, my adopted dad didn't really get on. It was my mum that done the best. And I got a adopted brother and sister. They were biological to my parents. There's a 15-year age gap, and they were whiter skin, and I was always jealous of them, and just because of skin colour, and we all love each other, but we're not very close family, and yeah, as soon as I found out, I had the attitude like it was me against the world. age 18, and I was, just got involved. I was 18. I was turning 18, so I was able to go to the pubs. I think I'd already dabbled in drinking drugs before then.
Yeah.
And I just got involved in the nightlife, and I was just ignored that, put that to the back of my head, and that was quite easy. At age 18, I wasn't ready to deal with it. I wasn't offered any support either, and because of my parents got divorced, so I ended up getting a flat myself, because I was staying in England at the time. Got a flat myself in Scotland, and just stood on one, 2 feet, and got a job, and got involved in drinking drugs, and just had fun. But over the years, that would take its toll. I'd also got, enjoy myself by going on holidays, and I used to go over to Ibiza in the summer. So, everyone thought I was quite well known, and a people person, and everyone thought I had an amazing life. And little did they know what was going on in my head.
So a lot of masking going on, I would imagine. Masking.
Yeah, and going on. Escapism, going on holiday. When COVID happened, couldn't travel anywhere. So that's when I was just like, I would always say I'm going to stop drinking or stop drugs just for a little bit, and I'd never do it. And then COVID came, and I was just like, let's stop being all talk. And then I done an unplanned year, well, over a year, off the drinking drugs. And that gave me my head. I wanted to have a clear mind to deal with my adoption. That was a long process. And even when I'd done my year off, I still hadn't told anyone. And people were saying, you should feel amazing, when I was still upset and still, itching to tell people. Over my year, I opened up to the doctor. I tried to get counselling in 2019, and I wasn't ready. I just walked out. So that's why I can understand when some people don't talk. But then I eventually got counselling in 2020, and each baby step I took, it made me, it was a big weight off my shoulders, because I didn't know how long I could carry keeping my adoption a secret. And I made it that much a big deal, I was ready to take it to the grave with me.
So can I ask you on that then? So in your head now, do you feel it was the adoption or the kind of results of being adopted that kind of made you want to hide it from people?
It's known that it's very important to tell any adopted child from a young age, because we've had damage and not to tell them. So me finding out at 18, and growing up, I felt there was something odd about me, but because my dad was Moroccan, adoption didn't cross my mind. And I was ashamed of my family growing up, the religion, the way we were dressed, the accent, our appearance, not much money. So I was ashamed that part. So finding out I was adopted added more shame.
Right.
And just kind of, when I found out, I was just like, I'm not telling anyone. So it was quite, growing up, the area kind of made me tough skin. So I didn't want to give anyone any ammunition to basically, I didn't want to feel vulnerable at that age. So I just basically kept my personal life to myself.
And do you think doing it for that long has had a bit of an impact on how you feel about it, and did it have an impact on how you dealt with it?
Yeah, because I hated it. Yeah, I was ashamed. Didn't feel comfortable around my adopted family, regardless of they were very supportive, and I would just push them away.
Hmm.
And just running away, really.
So, and it's interesting, the late discovery adoptee, I've spoken to a couple of people actually for conversations on the podcast that have had that same experience. Was there a reason why you found out at the age of 18? Was it just something they sat you down, or, you know, you've turned 18 now, you need to know this, or was it kind of something happened? Or
it was done out with love. Just my adopted mum. She just couldn't find the right time to tell me.
Right.
And I understand now. Mm. I was really angry at the start, but I was upset. I was literally I ran at the house crying, and I just was stubborn and didn't speak to anyone. Mm-hmm. I was in England at the time, and I just booked a flight to Scotland a couple of days later, and just like me against the world. It took a while to rebuild that trust back. And my adopted mum, she was great. She would phone me every day apologising, even to this day. She made a mistake. And it's not her fault. She wouldn't have an instruction manual on how to adopt. She didn't have much support. So she done her best.
Mm.
And she's done it out of love. I've known a lot of people who have found out not intentionally, and so I really sympathise with them. It's not nice to find out anyway, but there's not much we can really do but learn from it.
Yeah. So I'm interested, because obviously support is a big thing, isn't it, in terms of coming to terms with it, and also all the other stuff that goes with that in terms of counseling, therapies and stuff like that. So where did you start when you decided you were going to do something about dealing with your feelings and your emotions and stuff?
So I started to stay sober in March, and then May I plucked up the courage to phone the doctors, and I had a brilliant half an hour to an hour conversation with the doctor. There's a lady, she was fantastic. And she then put me on to someone. Luckily, I was in a good mind space.
Mm.
Because when I decided to deal with my adoption, most of the things were closed, if you remember, at the start of lockdown. So I was just getting passed to people, and everything was all over Zoom.
Yeah.
It was all new to me, and I was, as soon as I had a conversation with the doctor, felt great. Then I went to my first counsellor, I felt great. That was one where I paid for, and then I got passed on to Adoption UK, and I got 5 free sessions with them. That was great. So each time I was improving. I was very difficult to deal with. quite a lot of the counsellors were blown away, and they were just like, because I've got a really, really 100 mile an hour mind.
Right.
I'm really stubborn, don't listen. And they really struggled to get through to me. And then I got introduced to support groups over Zoom.
Mm.
And first I wouldn't speak on them, and now fast forward nearly 2 years later, 18 months later, I'm in about 10 Zooms over the month, and that's the Zooms would only happen once a month.
Yeah.
So that wasn't enough for me. I'd finally been able to talk about my adoption, and only able to do it once a month. So I was screaming out for support, and there was none there. But now, because I'm a kind of guy that needs to know everything, I've made friends with lots of people and found out a lot of a lot of support that's available. But as you do need to kind of do it yourself, persevere yourself, because it's not just given to you on a plate.
Yeah,
and I feel like the doctors are not, I don't know, about educated or aware of how much adoption trauma is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I hear a lot of adoptees saying doctors don't really understand. And if you say one wrong thing to adoptees, some people get really upset.
Mm-hmm.
And and then there was Facebook groups. I joined Reddit. So I was still with that ashamed aspect. So Reddit, I didn't have to give my name. I just opened up about my story. Didn't have to put any names. So yeah. I was hidden. And then I joined the Facebook groups. I was always scared about joining the Facebook groups in case someone seen me in them and put two and two together. I was paranoid. Right now, looking back, I would think I was silly. But now I'm in over 30 Facebook groups. So over the 18 months, I'm quite happy with the progression I've made.
Mm.
But I remember me back then, there was brick in it to even get help. So that's why it's important to some people take it slow.
Yeah.
And it can be very frustrating when you don't see, you don't feel yourself getting better. Because I was always do a counselling session and I was like, I'm 100 miles an hour, I've got more to say, more to give. That's not helped me. But looking back, it did help me.
Mm.
It was a long journey, and I'm still not 100% either, but I've learned a lot.
Yeah, and I was just going to ask you there, because in Scotland support for adopted people isn't regulated like it is in England, because Ofsted are obviously, they regulate it in England in terms of where you can access support from if you're adopted, if it's an issue related to adoption. So do you find in Scotland you can not necessarily access support easily, because you've said that you can, but is there an understanding of adoption outside of the doctor's kind of surgery? Is there therapists and counsellors who have an understanding and appreciation?
Yeah. Not many in the UK. So that's what all the adoptee community are trying to improve, but just baby steps. Not many people understand adoption. For example, I was getting, speaking to a nurse, she asked for family background.
Mm.
And I said I didn't have any because I was adopted. And then she went, oh, that's fantastic. And little does she know that at times I didn't feel like my adoption was fantastic.
Yeah.
That's what some people think, adoption's really great. It does help a lot of people. My situation, if I didn't get adopted, Morocco was a poor country. I could have been running the streets in Morocco.
Hmm.
What plays on my mental health is why did my mother give me up? In Morocco, there's different laws with they can get in trouble from the police. It's frowned upon if the lady had an affair, and another one's poverty. She might have had no money, it's a poor country.
Mm.
But then I always like to put a spin on it. That could be a positive, I could be a prince over there. And that's the kind of, every single scenario is just speculation. So I've got no facts, but that's how my mind works.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's the same for any other orphans out there. Yeah, because usually adoptions, people are adopted out of a bad circumstance and are just placed with a family. And I doubt there is some checks to start, but I don't know if there's many follow-up checks. And that family's your one for the rest of your life. And you, I don't know if it's like 50-50. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. I'm pretty lucky. I've got a supportive adopted family. So I've got good friends as well.
And I guess unless you've experienced the same thing, then you're never going to understand. And that is truth, isn't it? You know, we were talking before we started recording about, you know, we created a podcast to help parents. And we, as parents, we've all adopted children. So therefore, our experiences aren't always the same, but they could be quite similar in terms of some of the experiences. But we can't ever assume what it's like for someone who is being adopted or has been adopted and what they go through. And the story you've just told there about all the kind of assumptions that you make, you know, you could be a prince or you could be a pauper. You just don't know, do you? And to have that running through your head 24/7 must just sometimes drive you crazy.
Yeah. With my adoption, so I'm trying to find my family, but I've done all the DNA sites. I've messaged and, is it intermediaries? Well, someone was like, yeah, it's £150 for an hour's work. And I was just like, there's even search angels. There are people who look for you for free. Mm. And everyone's looking at my case and going, it's a bit too difficult.
Oh, really?
I email every single organisation and everyone's saying, yeah, go and speak to them. They're just passing the buck. People have phoned the consulate, still waiting 6 months. It's been 6 months, but I know they're really busy. They're the only people that can really help me. And then I'm thinking, why am I even doing this? But everyone's got a right to find out where they came from, I believe. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, by me going to Morocco, visiting the town, can put me at peace, because right now, I'm not at peace, and it's pretty tough. Oh. And yeah, COVID's not helped either.
No,
but it did make. And I'm kicking myself for why did I not deal with this when I was 18?
Mm-hmm.
And then quite a lot of adoptees do that. So they dip in and out their adoption, like, because you've got to juggle living a life and your adoption. I've left. If I go back to the town the hospital was born in 30 years ago, most of the people might be retired. Don't know if any records, but yeah, I've done all the DNA sites and my highest match is a fourth cousin.
Right.
So that's really low. But DNA, like, you can't buy the DNA sites in Morocco. They cost in the UK, I think, about £60-70.
Mm-hmm.
No one in Morocco's got that money to afford that.
Yeah.
And if my mother was ashamed of having me, then sometimes they are not interested to look for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another barrier for me with the language barrier.
Yeah.
And then there's also another barrier for me with not being religious.
Right. Same religion.
They might turn me away or not interested.
Mm.
And then there's, yeah, I don't even know if I even managed to find any relation, what he's going to hug it out.
Yeah.
I just want to thank them, really. But, and at the same time, just want answers to try and put it to bed. Because the last thing I want to do is try and be obsessed with this and just let it take over my life. And yeah, because I'm searching for something, but I don't know what I'm searching for.
Yeah, okay.
Hopefully, I can be at peace once I visit. Once I visit, which I plan to do in the next couple of months.
Right. Yeah, and I guess you can now because there's aeroplanes that can go in the sky now.
Last year, like you go on holiday and then a country went on the red list.
Yeah,
I would hate that. That actually happened in Morocco. Some people were stuck for a month.
Really? Yeah.
So
maybe don't want that. I don't know. You might want that. I don't know.
Well, that's what that's behind us now.
Yeah.
But, every day I'm not there, it feels like.
Mm.
I'm wasting a day.
Yeah.
Every day I'm not there, it's more time to prepare.
Yeah.
So
thinking back there, because you found out when you were 18 and you're now, did you say you're 32? So that's quite well, isn't it? And then you've started dealing with it in the last 2 years. Have you got any reflections in 2022? So where you are now,
mm-hmm.
as to what the kind of, the blockers were for you kind of not dealing with it, because it's not something you'll ever be able to 100% deal with, I don't suppose, you know, having not been in your position, I don't know. But is there anything that springs to mind as to why you didn't kind of do it earlier? COVID just, aside, just, you know.
Maturity. I was young. Mm. I'm still immature. So I'm a bit more mature, but I'm immature. So I was just like, I'm going to live my life. I love traveling. I traveled around the world a lot, Australia, mm. Philippines. Interestingly, I never went to Morocco.
Summer.
I just loved traveling and partying.
Mm.
And that eventually took its toll over the years. But I imagine I wasn't ready.
Mm.
And I never really had much support. That's from me pushing everyone away.
Right. And do you feel that you have an obligation to your adoptive parents, or does that not really come into it in terms of what you're doing?
With adoptees, some adoptees, I'm pretty lucky that they're being supportive, but some adoptees, if they go to search for their birth family,
mm.
their adoptive family get jealous mm-hmm. or get upset. So some adoptees have to search in secret. And even if you find any of birth family, they can accept you on the spot or they can reject you.
Mm.
And they can, further down the line, they can accept or reject you. So it's like, and when they do that, it's like a double wham of emotions. Yeah. And it's brilliant for the people who have supportive birth families and supportive adopted families, and everyone's together. That's ideal, because that's kind of a positive from being adopted. You can get two families, but some adoptees are stuck in the middle.
Mm.
Some adoptees have had got terrible adopted families and terrible birth families.
Yeah.
So then who have they got? Luckily, I've got a good adopted family. So when I feel an outsider, so when I speak to other adoptees in all these meetings and we're all talking about reunions, I can't even find anyone. I've got a fourth cousin, so four cousins like way back. It's like all the professionals are like, that's too low, Ryan. I don't have a say in any of that because I don't know what they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know if I'll ever go for that because I've got a very, very small possibility of finding a family. But I'm the attitude that I want to try. But and then see this task. It's a big task. So sometimes sometimes it's a stop start process. So sometimes I'm like, this is too hard. And what am I trying to prove here? I'm doubting myself. And then sometimes I'm like a man on a mission. So, it's just that's obviously the good and the bad days. Because it's just being relentless. And just, every time someone's saying no, just being like, right, just keep knocking on everyone's door. And sometimes you just can't be bothered knocking. That's my attitude. But I'm in good spirits just now, so I'll be knocking away.
And I was going to ask you about peer support, because peer support is something that, like we talk about, in my experience of peer support was like, you know, if you do the same thing, then that is your peer and you get supported by that. But you're talking on a different level with this, because it seems to me that that's really helped you. Has it, or is that just my impression?
The adopted support groups helped me brilliantly. So the way all these people, they're strangers. And what I learned is that strangers care. So I can have conversations with these like-minded people that I can't have with my friends and family. Some of them I can, but adopted people, we get each other. So the conversations that go on in these groups, they help a lot of people within the group, and adopted people get it. And it's a place for some people to cry, it's a place for some people to vent, it's a place for some people to tell good news. And then, yeah, if with my attitude, if anyone's adopted, I've got their back, like, more. And I was always easy to talk to, and I was always like a problem solver. And I always wanted to repair people's bad relationships, and sometimes taking that on too much. Like, I would absorb all the bad energy, and I was always in the middle, trying to sit on the fence, and some people got annoyed about that. And yeah, I was always a forgiving person. I don't know, it's kind of like a trait from adoptees, like, just, I had a lot of people do bad stuff to me, and I just forgive them. And so you're just trying to have that attitude where you don't want to be angry anymore. And the support groups really helped me. But there has been times where I went to the support group and it didn't help me.
Yeah, I'm really frustrated.
But my attitude is, I'd rather go and try it than not go. And that's why I try and encourage people. So people are having got stuff on their minds, or going through issues, that they might not be able to speak to their partner or their parent or their friends, but they'll be able to speak to a professional or a stranger in a support group, and they can have the they can have conversations with them that they can't have with the ones closest to them. And that's their way of a release. And it's not anyone's fault that you can't have that conversation with them. You kind of just see it how it is. Like, someone just takes their mother. If your mother is just your mother role, you don't. And so some people can talk to their parents or their partner about anything.
Yeah.
And then for the stuff you can't, there is others out there. Because the last thing you want to be doing is feeling alone. Because I feel like that. When I opened up about my adoption, I seen it, this whole adoption community, and I was like, wow. I didn't know any of this existed. And I hear that a lot of the time, people joining the groups going, I didn't know there was that many adoptees out there. I thought I was only one. And yeah, there's probably a lot of people who are going through the same thing.
Yeah.
It's usually stuff to do with, like, a fallen relationship or a loss of a loved one. It's not even like about adoption. Like, there is people out there. So for instance, I've got two friends. One of them, they both got their mother, and the dad's not in their life, and they don't get on with the stepdads. And then once both of them had a similar story, they were like chatting away, So they were able to, and once you find someone with a similar story to you, you can relate and not feel alone.
Yeah. It's quite profound, actually, isn't it? And I think that it's probably a good thing that you find a little bit of a tribe going on there, even if it's not, you know.
Yeah, and I want to try and help everyone.
Yeah.
So when I put my story out, I got like 14,000 views on YouTube. And I've done a video to tell the whole world.
Yeah.
And I've loads of people reach out to me. And I've done my best to get back to every single person. Thank them. And some people just send in a love heart. Other people send in a 3-4 page story. I think I had like over 1,000 messages. Literally, I kept counting them, and I made sure I tried to get back to everyone. And it was good that my story had a ripple effect to others, because people thinking that I lived an amazing life. That's what killed me as well. People come to me, your life's amazing. And then, when I was doing my traveling, really that was just like, I do a holiday, what's my next one before I feel crap? The holiday blues. And when I came off the drinking drugs for a year, they were like, you still feel amazing. But at that point, I hadn't told anyone. I hadn't told the world about my story. And I was bottling it to do it. And yeah, it's sad that I've lost a lot of friends due to drinking drugs. And usually you take them because you've got something going on in your mind. So I gave myself a year off them to reset, have a clear mind. And then even when I was off the drinking drugs, I still had bouts of depression. But now I've learned, and when I was off them, I came up with loads of ways to make myself feel good, like doing volunteering, just tried an oil called CBD, I was setting goals, there was a huge list that I'd done to make myself feel better. And I was just winging it. I was reading self-help books I'd never used to read. Just trying new things, exercising, going hill walks. I hated it, but I just did feel good at the end. Exercising and even making the first move to connect with people because it's easy just to disappear and just when you're low. So then it's important to have people around you, whether it be a large group of friends or even just that one person. Because I'm quite a loner sometimes, and when you just go into yourself, one day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, and everyone's phoning you, and then you think you're ignoring them, and just each day makes it more and more difficult. And then when you come out of it, people don't understand. I noticed that one small thing could make me get better, whether it'd be like, right, let's get up and go for a walk, or let's get some food. Or my friend came round to me one time and brought me a cake. And then I sat there, I love cake as well. 10 minutes later, I jumped up and I was just like, I brushed myself off, and I was out exercising with him, and these small gestures can make someone feel better. And you just have to go really, really gentle with people, because you can't be forced to do something. See, when people keep wanting and wanting, and you're just like, you're drained, or a change can send you low. So it's really important to have that balance.
Yeah.
And it was just, Yeah, there's, as soon as I was always kicking myself after I came out of depression, because I'd be like, look how many days I've wasted, and you're just walking around and being like, I was having suicidal thoughts an hour ago, and now I'm snapped back to normal.
Yeah.
And some of it was drinking drug related. I loved a party, and then after a party, I'm on my bed for 4 or 5 days. So, it's in a way self-inflicted. But that's why it's always important to try and find your balance, because you don't really want to be taking it to escape.
Yeah. So, I'm just curious, really. The fact that you made that decision to kind of come away from the alcohol and drugs.
Yeah, it was just for a year, yeah.
Yeah. So does that mean that doesn't happen anymore?
But I try and do it more sensibly.
Yeah, okay. So you wouldn't class yourself as addicted or?
No, I was never addicted, because even before my adoption, I had took drugs and drank as well. So then I never turned to drink or drugs. Because
as a result of that, yeah.
As a result of that, it was they were fun.
Mm.
But when you see the damage it's caused to people,
it's
an issue. Mm. And the people who are addicted. So my thought is that it's impossible to stop people from taking drinking drugs completely. So to try and get people to live a balanced life, limit it. So I'll go out partying for 2-3 days. It's like over the month I'll go out 2 or 3 times, and then I'll have like 2 months off. So it's back in Ibiza, I was doing it 5-6 times a week.
Right, yeah.
Even 7, and that led to me being unconscious a couple of times.
Mm.
And I can imagine it's not good for your body or your mind. But I'm getting older as well. trying to be sensible.
Yeah.
With a lot of people losing their lives due to drinking drugs, and people going downhill. Yes, and that can happen very quickly. And I hope people bounce back to whoever, if it does happen to them.
Mm.
But also the message is that it can work the other way. You can get better. You can, if you make positive changes in your life. And I just hope people make steps up in their life rather than going a downward spiral.
Mm-hmm.
But just try and do lots of things that I'd done when I was off the drinking drugs, just to manage, be able to cope, coping mechanisms for, just keep yourself busy. That's what I was doing. But,
and do you feel like that's something that you want to continue doing?
Yeah, so I'm always going around checking people are all right. Right now I'm kind of juggling, trying to live my life, do podcasts, go to all these adoption classes and help my friends out. And just trying to find that balance there. But I do really want to help people. Mm-hmm. And it is important that I can only help them to the best that I can do. Because, if you want to try and help everyone and then you get overwhelmed, and then if you let someone down, you're like, yes. So see when I mess up, which I mess up a lot, I always try and do something better to fix it. But it affects me even more. When I make a mistake, or if I upset someone, and sometimes you're getting pulled in all different directions. You've not got a lift to give. You're running on empty. Yeah, so it's important to, you want to help, but yeah, just do it. To try and do it sensibly and just like, yeah, I'm all about dragging people out the gutter. Yeah. And then, but I need them to want to be lifted up as well instead of weighing me back down.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it's like, it's you want to help all these people, but at the same time, you don't want to bring yourself down too low because being around negativity all the time, too much. If my friends will phone me and we'll sit on the phone for 20 or 30 minutes and I'll just be, we'll just be talking crap, but I'll try and be motivational and put them in a good mood.
Yeah.
So they're ready to smash their day. So I feel like I've got that ability to make people feel good. So I've tried my best anyway. I don't want to put any pressure on myself. But I understand what it's like. You know, I'm really stubborn. You know, if I'm feeling low and someone tries to make me feel good, I'm just like, go away. And sometimes you just need to be like, sit down and go, I'm not moving. And then sometimes you need, obviously, you need to read the situation and you just say, give that person space. But I'm not perfect. I'm learning. But yeah, it's just try to just tell my story. Hopefully people can relate. Yeah, don't keep secrets. Tell lies that kind of chewed me up. As you don't need, you can still have a good life. You don't need family. If you, people who don't have family, you can, it's about who you got around, your friends. I made it in my mind that biological family meant everything. If you were, you've got a better life than me because you know your biological family. That's what my mindset was. And life's what you make it, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And quite a lot of people get they fit down because they don't have life figured out. And I don't have life figured out either. You need to get a house. You want to travel the world, have a family, get loads of money, get the best job. That all that stuff's nice, but you can still live a good life without all that stuff. I just need to try and snog it. Mm. Or just think chasing a dream or something. But don't put any pressure on yourself. Just live.
Yeah.
I hear lots of people who have got families saying, well, I wish I traveled the world. And then people who do traveling saying, I wish I had a family. So it seems like no one's ever happy.
Yeah, well, there's probably something in that, to be fair. Well, Ryan, for what it's worth, from my perspective, listening to you and listening to what you've had to deal with and being a late discovery adoptee, transracial and transnational as well, I mean, you've got lots going on, and I'm just very grateful to have been able to listen to your story, to be honest with you. And I'm sure other people will be as well. And I really hope that, you know, one day we can have podcasts from adopted people who have been through exactly what you've been through. So, you know, thank you for sharing. I really appreciate it. And
it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And I just wish you really well, because it sounds to me like you're just kind of starting. You're at the beginning of what could possibly be a long journey, and you know, you're going to have a lot of bumps in the road, but hopefully there'll be a result at the end for you.
Yeah, it's just got to be strong-minded, think positive, and as well as